which have been running now for about 5 years. We had a lot of experience working with lots of data from a lot of players, and I'm here to tell you a little bit about our experience with retrieving data, storing data, and stuff like that. I titled this talk, SQL Considered Harmful in Order to Be Provocative. It's almost entirely inaccurate, however. The actual title of this was too long, and I couldn't really fit my name in big type anymore. So I decided that SQL Considered Harmful would be a better stopgap for it. But really what we're talking about here is that current industry standard databases are just inappropriate for the kinds of things that massively multiplayer games need out of a database. And I characterize that as being low latency, controlled working set databases. I'll talk a little bit about what we did when we tried to use a SQL database. And in fact, City Heroes and City of Villains are using a SQL database on their back end. And how that didn't work out very well for us, and you know what we're going to do now for our new stuff. So very first, we're going to talk a little bit about some database fundamentals. For those of you who know nothing about this, I'll go through this pretty quick, and it's in all of your textbooks from school, probably. So what is a database? Well, very simply, a database is a structured collection of data. Not going to be very specific about that yet, so we'll talk about a particular kind of database. But one of the major rules, or sets of rules that are used for databases, are called the ACID rules. ACID stands for atomicity, consistency, isolation, and durability. Each one of these things makes sure that you can actually trust your database. So atomicity means that when something happens in the game, it either happens all the way, or happens in the database, either happens all the way or not at all. For example, from massive multiplayer games, if you're trading with a friend of yours, either that trade happens entirely, they give you money, you give them something, or it doesn't happen at all. You don't want to give them something and not get your money back, right? Also, you don't want that to happen if you're a database or massively multiplayer developer, because that means people can start duplicating items. That's not good either. So atomicity is one of the tenets of database design. The next is consistency. The next is consistency, he said. Consistency is... Consistency means that the database is always in a legal state before and after a transaction occurs. This can extend in many different directions. The database itself has to be consistent, meaning that if you have rows that have unique IDs in them, then that means that you don't have any duplicate rows with duplicate unique IDs. It also means that if you have tables in a database or whatever structure your database supports that refer to each other, that those references are still clean. And last but not least, it also means that data is within bounds. Your hit points are never below zero. You don't have negative money and stuff like that. The last thing is called domain integrity, which is something that we'll be talking more about later. Isolation means that you never see the data in a database in some middle state. During that trade transaction, if I'm giving money to somebody and they're going to give me, a hat, there's never a point where I can look at the database and see that the money was transferred but the hat was not. Either they both happened or neither have happened. That's what isolation is. You never see something in an intermediate state. And durability, which people don't always think of because it's so obvious, means that once the transaction actually occurs, it stays occurred. It doesn't somehow revert itself. Once you say yes, if you're the database and you say, yes, I did that, then you darn well have better done that. There's a bunch of different kinds of databases. There's relational databases, object database, blah, 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 Wankel rotary databases. But the one that most people use and think of when they think of databases today are relational databases. Relational databases started around the end of the 60s, early 70s. There was a lot of, it's defined mathematically, and it's based on set theory and predicate logic and all that stuff. And there's been a lot of work done with relational databases over the years, and therefore more and more people are using them, and so it's sort of a self-feeding cycle. When you decide that you're going to buy a database package, 95 or more percent of them are going to be relational databases, SQL Server, Oracle, those are all relational databases. A relational database takes the basic idea, the relational model talks about sets and attributes and attribute value pairs and things like that. A relational database is a particular implementation of that model. You're probably all sort of familiar with this. The idea is sort of like a spreadsheet where you have a table A table has rows in it. Every row is a record. Sometimes people call it that, or sometimes they call a row an entity. And there's columns for each one of those rows. And each one of those columns represents a particular attribute on that row, and there's values in those columns for each entity. So it's like a spreadsheet. This is how most relational databases are structured. You'll have multiple tables. The tables will refer to each other in various ways. It's a very straightforward, simple way for you to be able to look at data, do intersections and unions of data and stuff like that. It's very convenient. So what is SQL? SQL, or SQL, as everyone pronounces it, even though you're not supposed to, is a computer language for manipulating relational databases. It's a declarative language, mostly. It was defined as a declarative language, very mathematical, right? Where you just talk about, oh, I want the set of all things which have this particular attribute, right? You don't talk about, I want to iterate over the set. No, you just get the set. And if you want to do something on the set, then you represent that as some other kind of declaration. Later on, various vendors have added procedural methods for modifying databases. One reason is that programmers think procedurally because the remainder of our languages, C, C++, all those are all procedural languages. It also lets you do things that are where if you have the rows ordered, you can actually do things which depend on the order of the rows. One of the major things that people use in a database, and you'll see in basically every database schema that ever exists, is a unique key. A unique key, and then, of course, every row has a unique key, and if it refers to another row in another database, it'll be called a foreign key. That's how you can connect two tables together, and I'll show an example of that in a moment. You can use this to represent hierarchical data, which is useful because hierarchical data is used in code all the time. Your C structures or whatever coding system you're using is likely to have some kind of structure that is hierarchical or referential. So here's an example. So I'm using a massive multiplayer game here as an idea. We've got two players, Warthog and John, and they've got two different player IDs because the player ID has to be unique for each player. And I want a list of the inventory items that Warthog has. So instead of cramming that all into the row for Warthog, I have another table. I have the inventory table. And the inventory table has all of the items for everybody in it, one row per item. And there's a player ID, that's the foreign key on that second table, which you can see that Warthog owns three things in this table, a hat, brooch, and a pterodactyl. The joining of these two tables is often called a join, which ends up doing a Cartesian product, blah, 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 blah. But the long and short is that you end up with each data type basically being represented by a table, and you link together data types or lists and things like that by using unique and foreign keys. This is one way that stuff is used. The other way this is used is in order to share data. So in this case, I have those same two players. Warthog, his class, is an orc. Every single player whose class is orc is going to have a 2 in that class ID column. This is convenient because if you have data stored on the, more than just the name on the class ID, then if you change the data in that secondary table, in the class table, then it instantly changes for everybody else who happens to refer to that table. This is called normalization. So SQL databases, or relational databases, provide all this stuff that I've talked about and more. And the reason why I'm telling you about that will become apparent shortly. They also have extensions for objects and for blobs, which is a binary large object. And all sorts of other extra little extensions. Some of them have hierarchical extensions. SQL databases are used by practically everyone. I mean, SQL Server and Oracle are the big two. And on Linux, you have MySQL and Postgres, PostSQL. They're safe and tested many, many years. I mean, since the early 70s, people have been working on them, have been doing research projects on them for optimization and basically, they're tested a lot. And because of that also, there's a lot of database administrators who are out there and programmers who have used these. There's lots of experience out there. So, why shouldn't we use this? The feature set seems fine. I can represent hierarchical data. I can, do queries on this data using a well-known language that many, many people know. It seems like the perfect choice. But why shouldn't I use it? Well, there's good things about it, right? The SQL Server is optimized for the general case. You can throw pretty much any kind of data you want at it as long as you sort of fit with a typical relational database construction rules. And it'll be able to query something, and it won't be terrible. It'll do a good job on querying it. It does great for most business data because of that. It's good at the arbitrary queries, like I just said. It'll always just work, which is great if you have a database, right? You don't want it to not work. But what's bad? Well, sometimes queries take a long time to set up. The database engine itself has to figure out, oh, you're asking for this really crazy thing. I might need to make an index for that. I might need to do subselects. It needs to figure out that stuff on its own. And so sometimes a query can take a long time to set up. It self-optimizes. You might think this should go under good, right? As you make queries of certain types, database servers nowadays notice this and say, oh, well, I should make, some extra little stuff on the side so I can do some fast lookups. But self-optimizing is not necessarily good for a game or a massively multiplayer game because it introduces stalls whenever the heck it wants. You don't necessarily want that. That creates an unpredictable latency, which in a massively multiplayer game means that when you click on an object and to pick it up, nothing happens until you're certain that you didn't click on it, and then it happens. It's extremely frustrating. So the unpredictable latency is really one of the worst things that we ran into using a relational database. And then the ugly. I mean, that stuff was just bad. Here's the ugly. The ugly is that if you want to insert a row, it is slow. So imagine on opening day, you've got the best MMO in the world. People have been hyping it for 14 years now. And you have, 200,000 people logging in the first 10 hours, right? All of them are creating characters, and then they hate it, and they delete it, and they create another character. Every time you create a character, you're busy inserting into the database. Every single one of those things has to be checked for consistency, and they have to actually insert in the database, so your data size is growing. Database is growing. Every time you grow the database, it has to reallocate more space on disk, blah, 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 blah. Inserts are simply slow. Once you finally get a character into the database, you're going to want to update the fields, right? With their, what stuff they got, or who knows, how many experience points they have. Every time you update a row, the per-row overhead is fairly high. After you've modified one item in the row, if you want to modify four items, it's really not that much more expensive. But every row update is fairly expensive, and we run into that too. In addition, there's what's called the object relational impedance mismatch. What this really means is something I covered a little bit earlier, where the actual data that you store in your code, which you're used to storing probably as structs or something like that, hierarchical structure, referential structure, doesn't map directly to a relational model. Remember, a relational model is set up with tables, and there's nothing actually built in, except for unique keys, which aren't really built in, but something that has become used in order to create hierarchy and references. And if you actually start using, unique and foreign keys to do this stuff, in order to get data out of the database, you find that the joins and the normalization itself cause performance issues. So I'm going to talk about that for a second. Every class in database schema architecture that I've ever seen talks about normalizing things, like I showed a little while ago with the classes and with showing and with the list of all of your stuff in your inventory being a row for each item. Doing it the right way like that can really backfire on you. So in City of Heroes, we had this idea that we would store statistics about each individual player. Things like how long did they spend on a map, how many times did they get killed, how many times did they kill other stuff, how many times did they click on this object, how many times did people call them a Nazi, all that stuff. We used to store that in a database, one row for every statistic. So as you can see here, there's a player ID, so 818, Mr. Warthog. Mr. Warthog had a variety of stats, time online, fights won and lost, there's a bunch of them, right? And then the value for each one of them. This looks, perfectly elegant, very reasonable, very structured, right? You know what the structure of this table is. The problem with this was that every single time I wanted to add a new statistic to Warthog, I had to do a row insert. And that's slow because it always has to keep the indexes up to date. And anytime I wanted to update a bunch of stats or any stats, I had to go do a row update. So let's say I'm in the middle of a fight and I punch a guy, blam, and he punches me, blam, and we both die. So I've now won a fight and lost a fight at the same time. I have to update two rows in this database, and in this table, in order to get those statistics in. And some statistics change all the time. Things like how long this person's been online. Things like how many points of damage have you taken. These things are updated so often that the traffic to this database was way too high. And on top of the fact that the traffic was high, it was expensive to actually make any of the data changes because they were all single-row changes. And so basically, we had to throw standard relational database concepts right out the window in order to get this to store in the database with enough speed. And basically, what we did is we had each player has a row in this table, and there is n stat values where the stat line, so the connection of what stat value refers to which column was something that we basically stored in the data file that wasn't in the database. So there you can see stat 0, stat 1, up to stat n. So this is how we eventually solved the problem. Whenever I wanted to update statistics on a particular player, I would make an update statement, updated one row, had a zillion of different little column changes in it, and that was actually fine. The sad part is that, as it says here, it completely abandons the relational DB model in terms of how this particular table is laid out. We found this happening a lot. We would, in the interest of performance, we would end up twisting our data either on our in our code or twisting the data in the database in order to get it to store well. Sometimes we had to twist it in both places. And that became, it just became this huge impedance, basically, which slowed down development time and then, you know, possibly slowed down the database, which then you would have to go back and try to fix it up again. So, what did we start with? Well, we have this latency problem. And the latency problem was that every once in a while the database would just go silent for a second, second and a half, because it was busy rebuilding its own indexes or rebalancing indexes and stuff like that. So what did we do? Well, we created a caching layer, which most people are familiar with doing. We created a what we called the DB server, but it really wasn't. It just looked like it. We created a server process where, which all the other server processes that wanted to do something with the database, they would talk to it. And it would return the data that was required, and then it would write any change, or it would also do writes to that, and any changes would happen instantly as far as the server was concerned, and then they would get written to the SQL database as it could. So there was a second thread, basically, which was busy writing stuff out to the SQL database. So as far as the game servers were concerned, it seemed like all of these writes just happened instantly. Of course, there's this buffer that's happening in the background going out to the SQL server. If that buffer ever got too deep, if you were doing writes so fast that even the SQL server couldn't keep up, then we have a throughput problem, which I'll talk about a little bit later. So this is a write-through cache. The changes that you made would show up instantly in memory. We were keeping all this data in memory in the database caching layer, and then you would write them directly out with SQL. But like I said, it turns out this was not enough. Even though once we got the latency down, which was great, we still had a problem with throughput. If you imagine that if every single data change is going to go through this database, there's huge amounts of network traffic. It's just too slow. The throughput is just too slow. The cache smoothed out all these latency problems, but we still have a problem with throughput. So how do we try solving this problem? Well, we reduced the things that, in order to, we had a lot of things that are changing all the time. Hit points change all the time. Your location, your XYZ location changes all the time. And those are getting written, you know, pretty much constantly. So instead of doing that, we decided that we would snapshot them. And so we would collect up a bunch of these changes and get to the final answer, and then we would send that off to the SQL server to be stored. Well, now my transactions are gone now. I don't change my hit points atomically anymore with anything else. I'm storing up changes on a, you know, somewhere, in some caching layer, and then storing them out to the database. So all this atomicity and consistency and all that stuff, the only thing I still have is durability. So all these things about the database, we're just not using them anymore. It's shot. So since that was shot anyway, we just went whole hog, basically. The game server. So in City of Heroes, we have servers which handle a number of players on a particular map, in a particular zone. And what we decided to do is we would keep all of the data for the players that are on that map on that game server. So that game server became the authority, effectively, for that particular character. So the database was is now being used basically as a storage engine, as opposed to a transaction engine of any kind. The business logic, to use database speak, is inside of the game servers themselves. And they operate on the data directly there. It happens instantly, right? And then every once in a while, we flush this data out to the database as a bunch of writes. That solved our problem pretty much, you know, altogether, unless somebody was being, a programmer was being particularly silly. But we're not using the database for anything now. And on top of that, what happens if I want to do something with a player that's not in the same zone as me? We're not in the same place. We can't operate anything atomically. So how do we handle that? Well, we handled that the best way we could, which was try to minimize the window of failure and just grimace and hope to God nothing bad happens. That's how we solved this problem in City of Heroes and City of Villains. We made sure that we flushed both characters. We talked to the other server and said, "Hey, I need access to your character." Lots of handshaking, lots of scariness. Didn't always work. Sometimes deadlocked. We just did our best. Not an optimal solution. So, in order to get our relational database to operate fast enough for our latency needs and for our throughput needs, we optimized our own code. We optimized the way we handled the server and what stuff we talked to the server with. We played tricks. We did all sorts of stuff. And now all we have is a glorified file system. Because all it's doing is storage. It's not doing anything else for us. All that great stuff I talked about early on has just become a hindrance, and we're not getting anything out of it. It's just not the right tool. It was not good for us. So, it didn't work for us. And since we're programmers at Cryptic, and hubris up to here, we decided that we would solve the problem ourselves. And that's the Cryptic DB. So here were the requirements, which should sound familiar now that you've listened to my talk this long. We wanted to regain all the ACID rules as much as we could. We wanted low predictable latency. We wanted to have high read and write throughput. I'm going to read the rest of these. Minimize code database impedance, because we want programmers to worry about the code and not worry about optimization. I didn't talk about this much, but the database schema itself, what things you want to store on characters or on inventory items, changes fairly often, especially during development. You want to be friendly to that, and we want to make sure you can back up and restore these things easily. There are some things we didn't care about, right? If somebody's offline, we don't really care that much about it. We can handle a little bit of delay before they're loaded. The domain integrity, which means things like your hit points can't go negative, and your health can't go negative, you can't have too many items in your backpack. That's up to the programmer now. We're not going to do any of that stuff in the database. General ad hoc queries can be slower. There's things that the game does constantly, which is mostly load and store things. Occasionally it does queries in order to figure out things like who are my friends, stuff like that, who's in my supergroup. But general queries like, tell me all the players who are level 15, or give me the top 10 players by experience points who are level 15. These sort of design queries, which are used in order to figure out what's actually happening in the game in terms of design constraints in the game. We decided that those things can be slower. They have to be possible, but they can be slower. And they don't need to be implemented in SQL. They can be implemented in whatever the heck we want to come up with. One of the things we did in City of Heroes and City of Villains was that we took all of our static data, meaning the data that defines the world, the data that defines the missions, all that kind of stuff, what actually defines a character class and the various attributes of those character classes. We didn't put that into a formal SQL database. We had on-disk structures that were loaded off of disk and into in-memory data structures that we then used. I mean, it's effectively a database, but it was in our memory. We're not like doing any transactions on it. It's just a big corpus of static data. And in order to help us do this, we created this idea of having a struct parser or a text parser, where you would define the layout and the memory layout and the data types of the various structures that we were loading off of disk. Many, many people have done this before, so it's not new. But we realized that by getting this sort of introspection data and data which describe metadata which describe the actual data that we're storing, that we had the makings of something that was potentially useful for us to do our own database stuff. So the struct parser was the next logical conclusion from that, which was instead of hand-building these parse tables, we wrote a preprocessor, which would look at the actual source code and the actual C structs and generate the parse tables for it. Sort of like an IDL compiler, except instead of having the IDL be a separate file, which is then compiled into like a C header and a C file and a variety of other things, we decided to write the code. You write the code, and then you generate whatever other crazy stuff you want from the code. And so I'll show you an example in a moment. But so there is extra annotations that we do end up putting on these data structures. We use this same stuff in order to serialize the static data, like for what a mission is. As we do, this is the decision that we made. We decided that we would build our database around the same thing. This unifies the way we handle the data between static data, game data, and character data, DB data, which means that the code is tested a lot, that it's got, you don't have to worry about performance with both of them and stuff like that, and then eventually allows us to take static data and start putting it in our database without, that big a deal. So here's an example, which is probably an eye chart. Those of you who are young can read this. So this is a typical struct definition, and you can see the things in capitals are... They're macros, sort of. What they really are is they're tags for the struct parser to go see and do stuff with. I'm not going to bother describing all of these things, but the stuff that says AST for auto struct are various other annotations for us to know how things are going to be used. As an example for the position, we want to actually persist the position of where the character is. On the other hand, we don't want to constantly transact that out to the database every time we change it, because that would be really slow. Remember I talked about like hit points? That's also a no-transact variable. It gets saved occasionally, but it is not something that is transacted as an official transaction. So like I said, you run one of those things that you just saw with our struct parser. It generates a couple files, and then generates metadata on all the structs that are annotated thusly. Memory layout, the data types, and what this allows us to do is create generic mutators on those particular data structures. So if you know that you have a data structure which refers to another data structure, which refers to another data structure, which our struct parser can actually handle, you can start doing things like writing, standard dot notation to say object A, dot B, dot C, and you can interpret that and actually get information from that. You can actually yank the data out because we know what the data types are and we know the memory layout. So you can write generic mutators based on the values. Once you can write generic mutators on these things, you can make a generalized database or a generalized mutator server, basically, which knows a few simple operations. And we can use this as the absolute basis for the actual database itself. The simple transactions are built in. Simple things like, I want to set this to this value. And I want to modify this, I want to add 10 to it, or I want to subtract 5. So a simple action like, I want to add 100 to experience, could just be sent directly to the transaction server like that. But more complicated things, trading would be a good example, where you have to make sure that there's enough space in the guy's backpack, and you have to make sure that he actually has the thing that he says he has, and there's all these various data integrity checks that are up to the programmer. Those complicated things need code. They need business logic. Stored procedures, if you will. So like we did in City of Heroes, we decided that we would separate the data and the logic ownership away from the actual database and put it on our servers. But instead of the servers just doing it without anyone else, without those things knowing what's going on, we decided that they would communicate. So a particular server, a game server, let's say, it owns the data for an entity, for whatever entity that a particular server knows how to understand. So you might have a team server, which knows about teams. And so anything that has to do with teams will be on that server. Likewise with entities being on a game server. It knows how to modify these entities. Meaning that it might have the business logic compiled directly into it. which means that if we, I'll get to that in a sec. So this is what the general, whoops. Sorry about that. Did I skip over this? Did I skip over 100 of these? I have less than 100 slides, I promise. So here's the general architecture. Those servers on the bottom, the team server and the map server, are basically things which understand entities and actually own some data. There's a transaction server above that. We'll see how that works in a moment. And there's the cryptic DB, which is that sort of a euphemism for the actual storage layer in this particular case. So the map server can use, map server and the team server can use the transaction server in order to coordinate like a traffic cop. But if the map server is working on data that only it cares about, and nobody else cares about, and it has the data in its hands already, then it can just work on its own and not tell anybody about it until it's all done doing its crazy transaction, and then it sends the information back up the chain. So these crazy transactions will be done locally, if possible, which means that they're crazy fast. And once the result of that transaction is complete, the data changes are then sent up to the transaction server to the cryptic DB to be saved. If it isn't complete, and I'll show an example of this in brutal detail shortly, then the transaction server is going to be a traffic cop and handle all the handshaking. We created these things called, in order to make it easy to develop these things, we created auto transactions, which the structure, since we already had a preprocessor running through all of our code, we're like, we'll throw caution to the wind. We'll make these things called auto transactions, which instrument and change the code so that it actually does these transactions in C. It's very easy to write a transaction. And all this works because we have field-level locking. We could do this with entity-level locking, where you lock the whole thing, but then the chances of deadlock and just waiting for other people to finish with the data becomes too high. And so we do field-level locking on the particular items we're modifying. Here's an example of an auto transaction. So if you were to ignore everything in capital letters there, what you'd see is a simple give gold function, which takes gold from one person and gives it to another. You've got a minus equal amount and a plus equal amount. You can actually look at the values of things. You can modify them. The extra stuff in capitals is for the struct parser to be able to wrap this thing up and make a proper transaction out of it. So it does things like it looks to see which particular variables are being used on the structure. It locks just those variables, so in this case, gold. It has certain transaction return codes that you're supposed to follow in case this transaction is used inside of other transactions and needs to be able to fail or not. It's basically very straightforward. There's some simple rules that you can follow and take any regular piece of game logic and just turn it into a transaction. So now I'm going to step through what happens with one of these transactions. This should look familiar to people who have written databases before. All right, so we have two game servers, basically. Two game servers, server 1 and server 2. They each have an object on them. One has A, the other has B. Server 1 also has some business logic on it. Has a compiled procedure called doTrade on it, which knows how to do trades between entities of type A and B. And the code on server 1 says, okay, I want to do a transaction. I want to do the doTrade transaction on A and B. Well, what happens? It turns out that server 1 doesn't have B around. It can't do anything to B. And so it can't just do all this locally. It has to talk to the transaction server and get this done. So it makes a list of things that the transaction server is going to do. Sends it up to the transaction server to actually execute. The first thing that's going to happen is the transaction server is going to try to get the data for B and bring it over to server 1 so that that doTrade function can execute properly. So it requests a lock on B, that that's what that really adorable lock is there. And then server 2 sends back the data for B, and then that just gets sent from the transaction server back down to server 1. And so we end up with a copy of the data for B on server 1. The transaction server then says, okay, I need you to do a doTrade. And so you have A and B. We're about to lock down A, basically, because we don't want anybody else modifying it while we're doing a trade. doTrade happens, and you end up with an A prime and a B prime. which are modified versions of A and B. The server 1 on the left-hand side there looks at the original values for B, the new values in B prime, and figures out what the delta is. It sends this delta up to the transaction server so that it can be told to server 2, who owns this data, remember. And then server 2, as you see on the right, makes a B prime, which should be identical to the one over on server 1, but makes a B prime, which from that delta in B. And then if you're doing field-level locking, it could be that other fields inside of B were also locked. They're completely disjoint, right? And a different transaction could have happened in the meantime. Technically, that B prime on the right might not be the same as the B prime on the left because of that. But all the fields that we care about were ours. And last but not least, the transaction server says, okay, everything was great. Everybody said that everything was working. Commit. And they commit. And now those entities are now A prime and B prime. And that's how a standard transaction works. I'm going to talk only very briefly about our storage engine. It's a pretty typical setup. The CryptocDB gets a transaction. So after all that was done, the transaction actually has to get to the full database, right? It gets a transaction. The first thing it does is it logs it to a journal, which is a write-ahead log database system. It logs it to a journal. Once it knows it's been written to the journal, it applies the change in its in-memory database because it has the whole database in memory. And then once in a while, it writes out an updated database file that has all of the changes into it. And then once it's done that, it marks the journal as, oh, it's been resolved in this file. So at startup time, let's imagine that, you know, the power goes out and our UPS doesn't work. At startup time, if it reads the database file that exists, and then looks at the journal to see what hasn't been applied, and then it can reapply all those things that are in the journal. This guarantees consistency and isolation and atomicity. So that was that whirlwind is my talk. The basics are that relational databases, unless you're really, really, really careful, will bite you. And no matter how, I didn't talk about it much, but we've tried stored procedures, we've tried all sorts of stuff. It doesn't work. Other manufacturers of MMOs have gone to using solid state disks in order to get their performance up and things like that. And Cryptic decided that we were bending over backwards so much that, and we were not getting anything out of it except what we wanted in the first place, which was just performance, that we would build our own. And I would urge you to be worried about the things that I talked about here, and don't just take what they say in class about databases about the right, that's the right way to do it. So that's it. I'm willing to take any questions. I guess move up to the mic. Or if you don't have to move up to the mic. I'll call on you. Just talk loud.
So my name is John from Fortera Systems. Did you look at all at federating data, like where you have multiple parallel databases with you slice them horizontally or vertically, and then you have reliable message queues?
The question is, do we look at a lot of federated data? We looked at it a little bit. We did not try to implement it at all because we already had a system that sort of worked, right? And so when we moved to the next, to our new system, we just found that why go through all the work? That's really what it came down to, where to put together a federated system, at least in from what we could find, it was going to be more work than, let's just do it this way. And the object relational mismatch still exists, and although latency might be, and the throughput's probably fine, but latency is still an issue for that.
How do you handle corruption of the of your trade function on a sub server or corruption of the delta data?
There's certain things that we relax, right? And God coming down and touching bits, cosmic rays touching our stuff. It's the same problem we would have with a regular database or SQL engine. If I set this value to 1. Update row 10 to say the value 1 on a SQL engine, and somebody hits that and makes it a 2, it's going to store a 2. There's nothing there for that. In terms of what happens once it gets to the cryptic database, everything is checksum. So the stuff that we're sending over is zipped and checksummed, and we'll know if they're bad.
Hey, I'm curious about the throughput of your cross-server transactions. The first question would be, do you have any idea of roughly how many transactions are cross-server versus local?
The question was, do we have any idea how many transactions that we're pumping to the server? I actually don't know the number offhand.
Like 1%, 10%, 50%?
I would say, Mike, this is honestly just a guess. I would guess it would be small, because the vast majority of changes are really on the local server. Most things are hit point changes, punching people who are nearby. We have a zoned game, right? We don't have a unzoned game. So I would guess it would be small, you know, less than 5%.
Do you have any idea about the performance of cross-server transactions versus local? Is it like one order of magnitude, two, three?
I honestly don't know the answer. The question was, how much slower are cross-server transactions? I don't think they'd be particularly slower, honestly. I mean, they're all inside the server set, right? So you don't have to worry about, we're on ultra gigabit Ethernet and stuff like that. The biggest problem is you have to lock the data. So it's going to be slower. You know, it wouldn't even, I don't think it would be an order of magnitude, a couple times, I would guess. But, I mean, if there's data contention, all bets are off, right? If we've written the code so that we're constantly conflicting on data, then we're in trouble with that.
You pre-compute all the locks you have to acquire and do them in a partial order, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir, you were earlier.
So I was just curious, with your database design, you're saying currently you keep all your data in memory. I'm
yes.
Curious if you had reached, you have memory, you have that box, what your plans are. Once you reach, you have memory, you can't fit in one box for that.
Sure, the question was, since we plan on having the entire contents of the database in memory, what's going to happen when we do run out of memory? And the answer is that it's a pretty straightforward task to virtualize that. There's a certain working... Okay, so if you have... if you're WoW and you have 7 million users, right, then each of them have, you know, 10 characters, that's way too much to ever fit into memory, right? But there's only a certain number of people who are playing at any one time. And so you can keep, instead of every single character ever created, you can instead keep a working set of what characters are currently playing, which greatly reduces what you actually need. There's a little bit more complexity because you can actually interact with characters that aren't online, but that's actually a pretty straightforward thing to do. And so if after doing that we run out of memory, then we make a second shard. I mean, but we're talking, you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of simultaneous players before we get to that point. Okay. Yes, sir.
One thing I'm curious about is, with your cryptic database with in-memory storage, do you cluster that, or is that, is like he says, that's one physical machine per shard?
The question is for the database itself, are we clustering the machines, or is it just one giant honking machine with a lot of memory in it?
Right.
It's one giant honking machine with a lot of memory in it.
So then a follow-up. Have you considered the idea of co-locating your data cache with the game servers themselves? Therefore, you can distribute your, you know, the memory burden among all the machines.
The question is, have we considered caching the data cache that's on the cryptic DB in with each of the game servers in order to distribute that task? We didn't actually consider it. We haven't needed to consider it, I guess, as part of the answer to that. The amount of memory you can stick into a computer nowadays is really very, very, very large.
Right.
And between using working sets, and you can also compress the data in memory, and there's lots of stuff you can do. That seems, we're talking about a database here, right? People are paying us a monthly subscription fee. It seems safer to do something simple. And so we probably, instead of, once you distribute the data cache, right, now you're going to have to deal with networking the data cache to some central entity so you can act. It just gets too many moving parts.
Right.
Would be my gut reaction to that.
Thank you.
Yep. Here's a question over here. Yes, sir.
How do you do stable backups?
I didn't want to cover that because it actually gets quite involved. That thing that I, the last slide that I showed is not actually one server. It's actually a set of three servers which work together in order to make sure that, one, that they can handle the load, and two, that they can actually constantly get themselves backed up properly. Remember that by using a struct parser stuff, all this stuff is just plain old data, right? We don't do any file mapping or anything strange like that. Every time we've seen people do that, it gets hairier and hairier in terms of the implementation. These are zipped flat files, effectively. And we did that just, again, the simplicity is key to us. So the way this is set up very briefly is there's one server, who's basically the front end to the rest of the game, and he's the one who's responding to read requests and stuff like that. And he's also making in-memory changes for every transaction that comes through. All those transactions are also teed to a second server. That second server is busy doing the same changes, but it never has to respond to anything. It's just busy making changes. And every once in a while, it writes out effectively an image of its database. It does that in a safe way, which I'm not going to mention right now. And the last server takes those periodic updates, basically. It doesn't just store out the whole image. It stores out what's been changed. And there's a last server which picks up those things which have been changed and then merges them into the big database and then ends up with a final big database, which is then the master database and gets copied to the first and the second servers, and now they have an updated database. So all along this line, this is split up for performance reasons and also because at any one spot along this chain, all the data is consistent on those machines. The first one might have a huge journal in it if for some reason the last machine dies, but it still has its journal. If that one dies, then the second machine is doing the same thing as the first machine, basically, except it's not responding. So it's basically a clone of the first machine. And then the last machine, if the other two are dead, the last machine has everything that it needs except perhaps the last short period of time of transaction data. And it turns out that massive multiplayer players care more about not being able to play than losing 10 minutes of data by several orders of magnitude. For those of you who are MMO developers, don't ever forget that. Programmers are prone to saying things like, well, did he actually earn the sword of death? I'm not sure. Did he actually trade it away? If the guy is complaining that he lost the sword of death, and you can look at his character and you can see that he had the sword of death, and you're pretty sure that he probably had it and he lost it somehow, who knows, again, cosmic rays, just give it to him. Because you will have saved money on your customer support, and you will have made a happy camper. And that is 10 times more important than getting the answer right. Always err on that side. Yes, sir?
Yeah, I have two questions that are related to each other. The first one is, it seems to me that you've created a custom ODB, and I was wondering what the advantage of your custom solution and the disadvantages of it compared to something already existing like Objectivity or Versant. And the second question is, while it's obvious why an OODB delivers better real-time performance when communicating with an MMO server, I was wondering, to me, the perceived disadvantage of an OODB, which I personally am willing to trade, but the disadvantage would be there's a loss of querying ability on the other end. For example, if marketers or somebody that's interested in researching behavior wants to come in and do a query and find out how many people are selling a specific type of item in a specific type of area, SQL seems much more apt for that type of query. So I was wondering how you guys have solved that problem or how you plan to.
Okay, so there's two questions. The first question is, why aren't we using some industry standard object-oriented database, some object database, and why are we using our own? There's two basic reasons for it. When we started working on this, we didn't really know about Versant. And in fact, when we gave our first talk about it, the guy ran up and shook our hand saying, oh my God, we've been trying to tell people this forever. So we didn't even know. We knew about other object databases, but they have their own impedance, right? For us, we knew what we wanted. We already had a static data storage mechanism that was easily extended, right? We already had one from a previous game, so it was tested. And if we were going to use another database vendor, right, we would then have to worry about getting all of our stuff into their system somehow. And that would cause an impedance of its own. And so it's sort of it's the incremental changes were never very painful to do it ourselves. Whereas I think the pain for going to a major change to an object-oriented database would have been a problem. I'm also not convinced that an object database would have actually worked for the kinds of stuff that we're trying to do. We're writing a lot of logic that looks just like code because we're actually modifying data structures internal to our game that were specified as C structs. And the fact that you can just write auto-transact at the top of a function and you know it works is worth its weight in gold. The second question is, without having SQL or some other known query language, and in general, the fact that it's difficult to query object databases, how are we planning on solving this problem for ad hoc queries? Did I get that right? The answer is that we have our own little query language that looks a little bit more like C than it does look like SQL. And because we know what all the data structure and all their references and how they connect to each other, since we know all of that, it actually can let us do very, very, very powerful things. And if it doesn't, and here's the key, if for some reason we don't have the feature that we need directly in the database, we're so close to the code, it's so easy for the database to interact with C code that you could just write the damn thing in C, right? And then just have it do it for you. So it's one of the other bonuses that we get out of being so tightly integrated.
Thank you.
Yep. Yes, sir. This is not currently in production.
How are you testing?
We eat our own dog food. The question was, how do we test this? And the answer is that we eat our own dog food, and that the true test, obviously, is going into production. And when we go into alpha and beta, that will be the true test. We also have, I mean, like everybody, we have our own stress tests, and we fire up a zillion servers which try to swamp the transaction server and all that stuff. But because we're using the same basic structure for storing and loading for our static data and our database data, that's being tested constantly. And right now we just have test harnesses, basically, which are testing in terms of performance, in terms of correctness and stuff like that right now. But, you know, any of you who've actually shipped a game knows that the world is a different place once you turn the switch on your firewall. Yes, sir?
Yeah. Well, my question is basically, should you have made CrypticDB from the start? Or did you actually, I mean, did you learn how to make CrypticDB and what queries and stuff you should make from having the generic purpose SQL database, which worked from the start, even if it wasn't performant enough?
I'm not sure I quite get the question. Should we have done CrypticDB from the start?
Did you get anything from starting with the SQL, which was a general purpose tool that worked from the start?
Did we get anything out of SQL?
Go ahead and not waste the time with it.
I regret to say that we didn't. In fact, the choice of SQL was thrust upon us by our publisher at the time. I think we had been storing stuff just in like flat text database files because we didn't really care at that point. We weren't working for any performance at all. And the decision was actually taken out of our hands because the NCSoft was doing publishing and operations for us. And they had a network team that understood how to handle these databases and do proper backups and all that stuff, which we had no knowledge of, right? So they basically said, look, we have games that already use SQL Server, and we know how to do that stuff, just use it. And so the actual answer was taken out of our hands. And so we just worked with it, right? So we didn't have to think about it. Would we? I have no idea. What we did learn from using SQL is what we really needed. We learned that latency, or actually variant latency, is just really a killer. And we also learned where the major throughput bottlenecks were in the way we coded. I mean, I didn't mention it, but I mean, you have silly and stupid programmers involved the whole way, right? Any programmer can take any database and in 10 seconds obliterate everything you've done, not in terms of what's missing, but in terms of, no, it's just busy doing stuff. You just have to make sure your programmers know what they're doing. So there's a lot of learning there, too, and all of that is transferable as well.
Thanks.
Yes, sir?
How do we handle
versioning on the data? You mean the database itself, or?
Yeah, like between code provisions as you add new fields.
Oh, you're talking about as we add new fields and stuff like that. So the actual database itself, if it sees a field it doesn't know anymore, for lack of a better term, right? It just ignores it silently. If we want to add a field that isn't there anymore, it just silently adds it, basically. There's cases where it can't do this kind of stuff. But there's easy rules to put into place to make sure that once we actually launch, that the schema change will harmlessly go up and down.
You said it's a known bad value.
You said it's, yeah, we set things to zero. Zero or null. Yes, sir?
Do you have a central control of the database design, or is everyone in the studio capable of changing, in a sense, the design of the database?
The question is, do we have control over the design of the database? Do you mean the schema?
Yeah.
Basically, every programmer can add whatever fields they want.
Can you sort of talk about any problems with that? I mean,
we haven't run into any problems with that. I think there's a certain data structure, right, which is the definition of what a player is, right, meaning his character, what it looks like, the fact that it has hit points, blah, 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 blah. Which at the very beginning of the project, somebody sat down and built. And that basic structure doesn't change that much. What does change fairly often is oh, I need a new field that does this, or, you know, I need to store, you know, I need to store some extra piece of information. Oh, this guy's a werewolf. I need a bit for werewolfism, lycanthropy. And that's really easy to add, and that doesn't really affect your schema that much. In terms of the overall structure of the schema, that we laid that out pretty early on, and we learned a lot about that, the schema that we wanted from City Heroes, of course. So. Yep. Yes, sir.
Do you have some sort of estimate of how much time and people it took to actually build this?
How much time and people, man hours, I honestly don't know the answer. Ben, do you know the number?
Let's say the whole system from start to finish is probably two people for maybe a year, maybe?
Yeah. Does that include the text parts or work?
Yeah,
it includes. Right. So about two man years. Person years, excuse me. Yes, sir.
Did you try multiple implementations of your SQL server?
Did we try multiple implementations of our SQL server?
Or of what you used when you experienced the problems?
Do you mean like Microsoft SQL Server versus a different
Oracle versus MySQL?
No, we did not. Although there was no indication to us, we might have tried MySQL. There's no indication to us why they would ever be faster. I mean, they would be better in particular, you know, sometimes at inserts, maybe the latency wouldn't be so bad. But we eventually ran through these problems, which I think actually are just endemic to relational databases in general. Unless, I mean, I'll put unlesses on all this stuff, right? Unless you pay really close attention to your database administration, right? So at the beginning of time, I could have said, look, we're going to have, I'm going to make up a number, 10,000 users, and they're going to make 20,000 characters total. Right? And so I make my database the size of 20,000 characters. Ta-da! Now I never have to worry about inserts. They're going to happen instantaneously. It just doesn't work that way. And because of the fact that we don't know how many people we're going to have, we don't know that kind of stuff, that I don't think that anything that's not really built for it, you're going to have to do a lot of work on the administration side to make sure that it works right. And one of our main goals was that we wanted to develop the code for the game and not spend all of our time developing code for the database, in terms of very specific things for the database.
Okay. Was there much profiling done or indexing of trying to optimize?
Yes. Okay. And SQL Server, the question was, did we spend a lot of time profiling? I'm not sure there's much we didn't try to do in order just to see where things went. I mean, we automatically modify a schema. We automatically index things. We automatically were creating stored procedures on the fly, trying to figure out how to make them faster. None of that stuff ever really, I mean, we're talking, they do 10 or 15, maybe even 20% improvement. And if you talk to a DBA and they say, wow, you got a 20% improvement, that's incredible, that's great. You can go from Microsoft SQL Server and go to Oracle with, you know, racks and racks of machines and get a 50%